Hello and welcome to episode number 51 of the AFTV Newscast, being recorded August 12th, 2016. My name is Elias Saba and I run AFTVnews.com, and this is where I talk about the week's Fire TV news. First up, big thank you to everybody who filled out the survey from last week, the one that I mentioned. It's still live right now, but I'll probably be taking it down soon. So if you still want to go fill it out, you can go to AFTVnews.com/survey. That'll take you to the form. It's very quick. Should take you less than a minute. I'll go over the results and kind of analyze them real quick and tell you how they're going to affect the stream. Basically, the survey was so that I would kind of get a better idea of how you guys were liking the podcast and what parts of the podcast you were enjoying more than other parts and if I needed to change anything. So let's go ahead and get right into that survey aspect of things. So here are the results. They're on the screen in pie chart form for those of you watching the video version, but I'll try to read off the results for those of you on the audio only stream. And speaking of video versus audio, first question was, how do you most commonly watch the podcast? And about 70% of you watch the YouTube version, 18% or so do the audio only, and 12% or so watch the live stream usually. Right around what I thought, you know, a bigger chunk of you watch the YouTube version than I thought. I thought the audio version would be pretty popular as well. But so my guess is most of you probably go to AFTVnews.com and you see the podcast is live and you just click that YouTube embedded player. And then that's probably the most common way most people watch the episode. So just good to know that, you know, I'm not wasting too much time with the video here, that it's not just everybody listening to the audio version. And so everything will probably pretty much continue as usual there. Even though most of you don't watch the live stream regularly, about half of you have watched at some point. So good to know that, you know, the live stream is somewhat popular. At least you guys hop on every now and then. So I'll definitely be continuing the live stream there. As far as the audio quality, seems like you guys are perfectly fine with that audio and video quality. So over 90% of you said the video and audio was a 4 or 5 star, with most of you saying 5 star. So good to hear that. I've got some decent equipment. I upgraded things a while back, so I think we're good there. No changes needed there, thankfully. So this question was really important to me. Which part do you enjoy more? The news coverage, which is pretty much the first half of the episode, or the Q&A section, which is the second half? So 70% of you like the news coverage more, and about 30% of you like the Q&A more. So that's really good to hear. I was kind of worried that I was being a little too redundant with the news, because everything I talk about is already on the website. And I imagine most of you visit the website fairly regularly if you're a fan of this podcast. So I was worried I was a little redundant, but it sounds like you guys still like to hear me talk about the news. I am going to change that up a little bit once we get further in the survey, where I ask you about the length. A lot of you thought that the podcast was a little too long. So one way I was going to cut that back is to not so much go over the fine details of all of the news topics, but more just hit the main points and then go into like my opinions or something like that about the actual article, you know. So I'm going to try to avoid just reading all of the details when it's already on the website, and you can totally go to the website if you want to get all those little details about the topic. But I'll definitely hit the main points that you'll absolutely want to hear about. And so I'll kind of trim things off that way. Next question is, which non-Fire TV topic do you guys like to hear most about? And you guys were pretty much split all four ways. So the options were pretty much other Amazon hardware, other streaming hardware, other streaming services, and other Amazon news. Other streaming hardware like Rokus and Apple TVs and Android boxes, that was just slightly most popular by 28%. But pretty much it was very split down all four ways. So I won't really be cutting out any of that from the episodes. But, you know, I'll try to cover more actual streaming boxes, more Android TV news, more Roku news, you know, if it's big news. You know, sometimes I worry if I diverge from the actual Fire TV topics too much, you guys might not enjoy it as much. But it seems like you guys definitely do like the other topics. I also asked if you guys had rooted devices, and so 63% of you don't have rooted devices, 35% do have rooted devices, which is right around what I thought it'd be. I was pretty sure that most of you don't have rooted devices, which is also why I actually asked the next question, is do you enjoy hearing about rooted modding/hacking news? Sometimes I worry that I'm talking too much about rooting or things to do with rooted devices specifically, or guides or hacks that come around that require rooting. I'm worried that since I was pretty sure most of you don't have rooted devices, I was worried that you might not enjoy hearing about that stuff. But the answer to this question, 79% of you do like to hear about rooting, hacking, modding news, even though most of you don't have rooted devices. So good to hear, you know, good to know that you guys still like to hear about what's out there, what's possible, even though you might not be able to do it right now today. You know, there's always new rooting methods that come along. So, you know, I think hearing about what you can do with a rooted device is probably important, which it does seem like it. So the next few questions were kind of tailored towards to get a feel of what you guys liked as far as topic wise. And so 91% of you liked hearing about Kodi, SPMC, and Mr. MC. 93% of you like hearing about new Fire TV apps. That's a little higher than I thought, so I'll try to include more of that in future episodes. About 88% of you like to hear about deals. This one was really worrying me, because sometimes, you know, people don't really care about deals. They think I'm kind of spamming or trying to, you know, advertise for apps or something like that. But, you know, nobody ever pays me. Nothing is sponsored on this episode. So when I talk about deals, they're genuinely, I'm trying to just pass on some savings onto you guys. So good to see that 88% of you like to hear about the deals. So I'll definitely keep including those when they're worthy of being included. And then this one was a bit, you know, a bit surprising. 98.8% of you liked it when I reviewed products and actually showed off actual hardware or accessories on the episode. So I'll try to get more of that stuff in. I've got some stuff lined up. Again, wasn't sure about how much you guys enjoyed it, but it definitely seems like that is a popular part of the episode. So I'll try to include that more often. It is tough because there isn't so much Fire TV related hardware accessories that I can really talk about. Obviously, when Amazon releases new products like those phones or tablets or that sort of stuff, I'll try to get that new stuff in, like the Echo and the Echo Dot and the Amazon Tap, all that stuff. So I'll definitely try to get Amazon's hardware in, but, you know, that only comes around a few times a year. So we'll see if I can get, you know, more reviews into the episode. So this is what I was talking about earlier. How is the length of the podcast? So most of you, 75% of you, said it was just right at right about an hour. Usually it's right about an hour, maybe a little bit less, sometimes a little bit longer. You know, I think I've had over 1.5 hour episodes when it's like a big day and there's been a lot of news to talk about. But about 23% of you said it's too long, and that's a pretty big chunk. And this was something I was kind of worried about. YouTube does show me analytics for the videos, and I could see that, you know, the vast majority of you don't actually watch all the way through. You know, most people will start it off and then it'll start to taper down as to how many of you continue through the entire hour. That's why kind of at the end of my episodes, I've been thanking people who stick around the whole time. But I think I'm going to try to shorten things up a little bit, maybe shoot for that 30 to 45 minute mark. It probably won't happen this episode just because I haven't had time to reorganize things or reassess things. But I'll try to, you know, basically I won't cut out content, but I'll try to condense what I actually say about the topics that I'm talking about. So instead of going into the details like I was mentioning, I'll just hit the big points. I'll give you my little opinions on things, and then I'll move on to the next subject. I do plan, since most of you do like the news portion, I do plan to cut more out of the Q&A. For the live stream, I will still pretty much go through all of the Q&A questions as I always do. But as far as what I actually include in the episode, I'll probably include a bit less of the Q&A. Definitely, I'll cut out the redundant stuff. And a lot of times when I don't really have a good answer for something, I'll still include it just so that the person who asked it doesn't feel like I skipped their question. But I think from now on, if I don't really have an answer for something, or I don't have, or I'm not familiar with it or something like that, I'll probably just cut the question out completely. So if you ask a question for the Q&A section and you don't see it appear in the podcast, it pretty much meant I didn't have a good answer for it, unfortunately. So, you know, I don't know everything. You know, a lot of times people ask me about specific apps or when something is going to come to the Fire TV. And, you know, I really don't have information about that. So I have to just cut that stuff out. So I'll probably be including fewer Q&A questions, but just know that the main ones, the ones that I have good answers for, I will keep those in. It's the ones that I really don't have much to say about the topic. I'm just going to go ahead and cut those out. But again, I will include it in live stream for sure. I will read every single question. I will address every single question. So if you ask a question and you want to see what I say, have to say about it, definitely you'll have to watch the live stream to make sure that you get your answer. So the next question is somewhat related to the previous one, is how often do you watch and listen to the entire episode? So most of you say you watch it every time. So 42% of you say every time, 30% most of the time. But then about a third of you say either half the time, rarely, or never. And so a third of you is a pretty big chunk to pretty much, you know, rarely finish the episode, essentially. And so again, that this is why I want to cut things down, try to condense things as opposed to actually remove content. We'll see how that goes. I don't know how well I could do it, but you know, I'll give it a shot for sure. The next question, if you're watching the video version, the pie chart is kind of all over the place because I went in and actually tweaked the answers a little bit. I kind of reworded them to kind of make them a little more clear. And that resulted in the pie chart being split twice, you know. So for each question, there are two slices. But for the most part, the question was, how important is a consistent release schedule? And this question was mostly so I know if I skip a week here or there, is it the end of the world? Are you guys going to be really annoyed by me? Are you going to stop listening because of it? The responses were pretty much split across the board. You can see the pie chart is like almost evenly split all throughout the responses. So it seems like about half of you do really care about the schedule and you want me to do it weekly, whereas the other half really don't care. You just watch whatever I put out. So I'll probably skip a week here and there when the news is a little light and I think I can fit it into the next episode, mostly so that I can concentrate on something else. Like this week, I've been working on the forum that I've been promising to put on the site. And so that, you know, I could have possibly skipped this week's episode in so that I could spend the time today to work on that forum and try to get it out. So really, I'll only be skipping episodes if the week is light on actual news and if I have something that will take up a lot of my time that I think, you know, my time is better used for that. And so it won't happen very often. I don't think it will be even like once a month or anything like that. But every now and then, don't be surprised if I do skip an episode here and there, just because it seems like half of you don't mind too much, especially if the news is on the lighter side. And last question was just a general survey question, was do you live in the U.S.? And so 74.1% of you do, 25.9% don't. A lot larger international crowd than I thought it would be. I mean, I look at my site analytics all the time, and so I do know a good chunk of you are in the U.K., are in Germany, you know, those kinds of countries there, because the Fire TV is available there, of course. But yeah, just that's pretty much the survey. Again, thank you so much for responding to it. You can go in and respond again if you want at aftvnews.com/survey. I'll probably keep it up for another week or so, and then I'll probably take it down. All right, moving on to the first bit of news that I want to talk about. Biggest piece of news this week, pretty much, was that a new software update started rolling out on the Fire TV 1, 2, and Stick. It's software version 5.2.1.1. And like I said, it just started rolling out, so most of you probably haven't received it yet. I do have a Fire TV 1 that actually receives updates very early. I actually traded with a fan of the website whose Fire TV just updates ridiculously early, and he was kind enough, Gary, if you're out there watching, thank you so much. He was kind enough to trade Fire TVs with me so that I could have one that would update early and so that I can figure out what's going on with these updates so I can report to you guys quicker than usual. I don't have the actual download URLs for this update just yet, so I haven't passed those over to Rbox for him to create a pre-rooted ROM based on it yet. I don't know if he's going to create a pre-rooted ROM. Sometimes he skips these minor updates because this is a minor update. So the previous version was 5.2.1.0. This is 5.2.1.1. So it is very incremental, which means there aren't too many differences, but it does actually bring in some new features that I will talk about in a second. So at first, when this update started rolling out, it wasn't quite clear whether it was going to come to all three devices, but now we kind of know it is coming to all three devices, the Fire TV 1, the Fire TV 2, and the Fire TV Stick, thankfully. I know we had a question last week from somebody wondering when was Amazon going to stop supporting the first Fire TV 1. Thankfully, it's not today, so the Fire TV 1 is still being updated, as is the Fire TV Stick. So like I said, I haven't received the actual update URL yet. I haven't been able to capture the actual update package, so I haven't been able to dissect it fully. But we do know of a few new features that are pretty obvious that have been added with this new software update. And the first one, which is probably the biggest one that I've figured out so far, is that you can now opt out of ad tracking on the Fire TV and the Fire TV Stick with this new latest version. So in the actual settings area, if you go to system, there's a new menu option called Advertising ID. And that option is turned on by default, or the option itself is called interest-based ads. And so it's turned on by default. And basically what that means is all Android devices have a unique Android ID number. And so in the past, apps would be able to read that Android ID number and actually use it to track the device across multiple apps. And so ad networks would actually use that as like a tracking identifier. And so if you launched one app and then launched another app, they would know it's the same person who launched both apps, assuming the advertiser was advertising in both of those apps, even if the apps were unrelated. As long as the developer was using the same ad network, the ad network could track you across ads. And so obviously people had issues with this. And the problem was, because that Android ID number was hard-coded, linked to each device, and could not be changed, it was like a permanent way to be tracked across ads, and the user had no control over that. So because of this, Google went in and changed things, and they introduced something called an advertiser ID number. And so all Android devices have an advertiser ID number, but the difference between it and the Android ID number is that the advertiser ID number can be turned off and it can be reset. And so if you don't want to be tracked, you can turn that off. And if for whatever reason you don't like the results that you're seeing, you could reset it, get a new number, and then you'd have basically a new profile with advertisers who are tracking that number. And so this feature that is basically caked into Android has now come to the Fire TV. And so if you turn off this option, advertising networks and apps will not be able to track you across multiple apps. Now, this likely will not affect the actual ads that you see on the Fire TV interface itself, like the banner ads, or now we have ads that show up at the top of the apps in the game section. So that stuff is most likely linked to your Amazon account, and that's completely different. Amazon controls the box, and they control what you see there, and so they might do some kind of tracking there. I'm not sure, but this is for third-party apps, the advertiser ID value. This is not for Amazon's ads. This is for third-party ads within the actual apps themselves. And so like I said, you can turn this off or you could just reset the value. This is with the newest 5.2.1.1 update. But just keep in mind that the biggest people who lose when you actually turn this off are the developers of the apps that you're using. So if you have this turned on, theoretically, you'll see ads that are more relevant to you because there's a little more information that the advertising network can build off of. And I know we all hate ads, but if you're going to see them, I personally would rather see ads that are somewhat relevant as opposed to just noise. You know, sometimes, very rarely, but sometimes I'll actually see something that is interesting in an ad. And so, hey, it helps, you know, if you click that ad, it helps the developer of the actual app that you're using. And so I'm always for helping developers any way that I can. And so if an ad actually catches my attention, I will click on it. You know, I'll actually deliberately go out of my way and click on it just so I can help out the developer of the app. But just know that if you are turning this off, you're hurting the developer just slightly. And so, you know, I know a lot of people are always quick to disable tracking of any sort. You know, it's like, it's just a general negative thing. People don't like to be tracked, obviously. But the ID number is anonymous, and there's no way to link it back to you individually. It's just some anonymous thing that they're tracking and serving ads to. And so just keep that in mind. But of course, I totally expect most of you to go ahead and turn that off, which is totally fine. Moving on, the next feature in this new update that I found was a new option in the parental control settings where you can pin protect app launches. Basically, what that means is if you have parental controls turned on, you now have the option to actually require a PIN code be entered before being able to launch any app. And so previously there was an option to block apps in general through the parental control options. But previously, if you had that blocking enabled, whenever you went and launched an actual app, any app, either sideloaded or official app from the actual, you know, Amazon Fire TV App Store, when you went in and actually launched any app, you'd basically just get a message saying, you know, parental controls are blocking things. You have to go in and disable parental controls. And it was really annoying if you had parental controls turned on for your kids, but you went and used the Fire TV, you would have to go in and disable parental controls altogether just so that you can launch an app real quickly. And it took a lot of steps. So this new option kind of addresses that annoyance where now instead of just displaying a message saying apps are blocked, you have to go turn off parental controls, it actually just pops up the PIN interface. You can enter your PIN and then that app will just launch. So nice little feature, definitely for those who use parental controls. I assume the vast majority of you don't use parental controls, so you don't really care about this. But hey, if you want to lock people out of your apps on the Fire TV, but you want to still be able to get into those apps, then you could use this feature for yourself, even if you don't have kids. Unfortunately, you can't lock out specific apps. It's an all or nothing thing. So either all apps are locked out or no apps are locked out. Hopefully down the line, we'll see Amazon add some more fine grain options where it'll let you actually select the apps that you want to kind of blacklist and require a PIN code. But unfortunately, you know, that's not the case right now. There is the opposite where you can actually create a basically like a whitelist. So there's the free time option on the Fire TV. I know a lot of you probably ignore this feature. It's meant for kids, but one nice feature of that is you can select the individual apps that you want accessible. And if you want to access all the rest of the apps, then you have to enter your PIN code to get out of that free time mode. And so if, for example, you have a non-tech savvy friend or relative that you've set up a Fire TV for and they keep messing things up or they keep getting into places that they're not supposed to, you could totally like whitelist a few set of apps for them and basically they can access it in that free time interface without having to, you know, get free range access to the entire Fire TV. So just an option there if you are looking for like a whitelist app mode, since there is no like blacklist app mode. So like I said, this update just rolled out. I haven't fully had a chance to dissect it like I normally do. So hopefully in the next episode, I'll get a chance and actually find some new things that this update brings. But I do expect it to be mostly just bug fixes. Definitely let me know in the comments either of this episode or any of the articles that I'm going to have linked below down in the show notes. If you do find anything that I haven't mentioned yet, anything different, any bug fixes, I really appreciate when people find things and let me know about them because it's tough for me to sift through the entire update and pick every single thing out. So I really appreciate when people help me out with that stuff. But yeah, hopefully I'll have more about this update in the next episode. All right, moving on, I wanted to talk a little bit about the big sale that we saw earlier this week. It was a one-day sale at third-party retailers. I don't know if you guys missed it or caught it, but basically Best Buy, Toys R Us, Sears, Bed Bath Beyond, Lowe's, Home Depot, even with the Amazon Echo, a whole bunch of third-party retailers basically put a lot of Amazon's hardware on sale. Amazon themselves did not put their hardware on sale. This was only at third parties and it only lasted for a day. So a lot of people commented and actually emailed me wondering, was this a fire sale, quote fire sale, meaning was this everybody trying to get rid of all of the current generation Fire TVs, Fire TV sticks? So both the Fire TV, the Fire TV stick was on sale, tablets were on sale, Kindles were on sale, Amazon Echo was on sale, Amazon Tap was on sale. So yeah, people were wondering, is this an indication that new devices are right around the corner? Are third-party retailers just trying to get rid of their old stock? Is that what the purpose of this sale was? So I wrote this little article to address this. And no, I do not think this was a fire sale. I don't know for sure. This is all just my opinion, basically. But we basically saw the same thing happen last year. And so this sale was basically linked to Prime Day. So I'm pretty sure Amazon has an arrangement with the third-party sellers that sell their hardware where basically Amazon won't undercut the third-party sellers because if basically Amazon is the cheapest place where you can get these devices, what's the point of third-party retailers selling them when, you know, wasting their space, wasting their shelf space with these products when Amazon is always the cheapest place to get them because Amazon always has better sales? And so that's what I think this sale was. It basically allowed third-party retailers to basically offer the products for the same price that they were during Prime Day. And that was the case where basically all of the prices across the board for all of the hardware that was on sale was exactly priced the same as it was for Prime Day. And it was exact because some of the prices for Prime Day were a little odd. Like for example, the Fire tablet was $33.33, which is a very odd price. And that tablet was that exact same price during this quote fire sale or non-fire sale really. And so that just basically shows me that this was definitely a Prime Day related sale where all of the third-party retailers got to sell the hardware for the same price that Amazon sold it during Prime Day. The other indication that this wasn't a fire sale was that newer stuff like the new Kindle that was just announced about a month or two ago, that was also included in this sale. And if it was a true fire sale to get rid of current existing generation hardware so that it makes room for the next generation, that Kindle would not have been included because that is a brand new device and they're definitely not looking to get rid of that anytime soon because, you know, it's only a couple months old. So definitely wasn't a fire sale. I mean, definitely it served the purpose of clearing hardware, I'm sure, and we do know that a next generation Fire TV and Fire or Fire TV stick is probably coming in the next month or two. And so I'm sure this did help places like Best Buy and B&H and all those retailers get rid of current gen Fire TV and Fire TV sticks, you know, if there is new ones coming out. But definitely that was not the purpose of this sale. So like I mentioned, we saw this exact same thing happen last year, except last year I didn't realize that was what it was. So basically last year around this time, first week of August, essentially, all of the retailers sold all of the stuff that was on Prime Day for the same price as it was on Prime Day. And back then, it was only the Fire TV stick that caught my eye because last year's Prime Day did not have the Fire TV in the US. And so basically only the Fire TV stick was on sale, and that's why retailers only sold the Fire TV stick. I'll put a link down in the show notes to that sale from last year where for one day only, all of the different retailers basically sold the Fire TV stick for $24.99, I believe it was, which was the same price as it was during Prime Day. And so again, this year, first week of August, we saw the same thing. So it definitely looks like this will be an annual thing where after Prime Day, probably right around the first week or two of August, we'll probably see retailers all sell Amazon hardware for the same price that we see during Prime Day, but for one day only. So something to keep in mind, you know, if you happen to miss a Prime Day sale or the hardware goes out of stock during Prime Day and you miss out on something, definitely we'll have to keep in mind for next year that third-party retailers are going to sell the stuff for the exact same price about 2 weeks after Prime Day. All right, moving on, the next thing I want to talk about is a new exploit that affects the Fire TV One. It's called Quad Router. So it's a vulnerability that affects devices with Qualcomm CPUs, and the Fire TV One is the only Fire TV device that actually has a Qualcomm CPU, and so it does affect that device. And so the Fire TV One running the latest software version, I know when I wrote this article it was 5.2.1.0, but I have tested this on 5.2.1.1, the new software update, and the Quad Router vulnerability is still present. Basically what it means is this vulnerability allows a malicious app to gain root access of the device. I have not heard of any malicious apps out there, or I have not heard of anybody using this exploit to gain root access, but it is out there. Google has known about this for a few months now, but it was only this week that it became publicly known. So the big takeaway is if you have a Fire TV One running the newest software version, which is not rootable currently, and you are looking to root your device or you want to root your device, there's a chance that this exploit will result in a new rooting method down the line. And so usually when that does happen, the exploit will come out, everybody will know about it, and then the modders, the hackers will start messing with it. And then we'll see it like built into a tool like that roots multiple devices. You know, that's usually the case. This is how the original Fire TV was rooted. It was some exploit that was just that affected a bunch of different devices. And then the King Roots method that rooted the Fire OS 5 when it first came out, that was kind of the same way. And so basically, if you have a Fire TV One and you want to root it, but you can't root it right now because it's not rootable, you should probably block software updates. You can go to aftvnews.com/block. That'll show you how to do it. You can block just to see if in the next few weeks or in the next month or so, we see a new utility that can root the Fire TV One. It's not guaranteed that a utility will come, but it is pretty much guaranteed that Amazon will release an update pretty soon that fixes this exploit, you know, because like most rooting methods, they take advantage of a vulnerability in the device, which Amazon has to patch, and so they probably will patch it pretty soon. For those of you who don't care about rooting and just want to make sure your device is safe, there's nothing really to worry about too much. The only real way you are in danger or your device is in danger is if you're sideloading just random apps that you find in random websites on the internet. Sideloading in general is not dangerous. You know, if you're getting APKs from legitimate sources, like for example, if you want to sideload Kodi or you want to sideload SPMC, as long as you download those from the actual developers themselves, there's no real risk. I mean, obviously something could slip in without them knowing, but it's very rare. I mean, somebody has to be on the team that actually is malicious, and yeah, it's very, very unlikely. But if you're getting your APKs from a legit source or from the developers themselves, you don't really have to worry about anything. Apps you install from the Amazon Fire TV App Store presumably are vetted by Amazon, and so those should be safe as well. The only apps you have to worry about are if you're just like searching Google for some random app and you're finding like a download link on, you know, who knows, some weird website or some weird file serving website. you know, those are the ones that you know those could be infected. And if your device is vulnerable to something, which all Fire TV ones currently are vulnerable to this quad router exploit, there's a chance that app can gain access to your system, gain root access, and actually, you know, install, you know, who knows? I mean, it could wipe your system and actually brick it, or, you know, it could actually install spyware or something like that. But again, as long as you're getting sideloaded apps from legit sources, you really don't have anything to worry about. And thankfully, with a device like the Fire TV, you don't really have that much sensitive information on it. You know, something like a smartphone is definitely more important because you're checking your email on there. You're probably logging into your bank, that sort of stuff. And so it's definitely more important to keep that device secure. But with your Fire TV, I mean, I guess worst case is somebody can gain access to your Amazon account, which could then give them access to your credit cards or your address or something like that. But, you know, we've never heard of anything like this ever happening with all of the different exploits that have come, you know, since the Fire TV was announced. So it's very unlikely that anything will actually attack the Fire TV specifically. But definitely something you should be aware of. All right, next up, moving on to app news. Like you guys said in the survey, you do like to hear about the apps. And so I'll try to include that a little bit more in the episode. A lot of times I don't write about new apps that come out. I just include them in my little sidebar on the site. If you haven't noticed on the sidebar, there's a section that says latest interesting apps, I think it says. But that's usually where I constantly add new apps that get added to the Fire TV that I think are worth mentioning, but not so much worth writing an entire article about. So I'll try to include more of those interesting weekly apps in the episode here, even though I don't write an article about them. But I'll go through them pretty quickly. So first up, we have dozens of local news apps were just added to the Fire TV. These are all apps from the Hearst Television Company. And so a lot of local news channels are affiliated with Hearst, and those have actually released apps, 26 in total. So you can look at that list on the site. Of course, I'll put a link down in the show notes to see if your local news channel has included an app. They're pretty nice apps. They actually have a live stream in there. You don't have to log in with a cable subscription or anything like that. You just have to deal with some pre-roll ads every now and then. But definitely check that out and see if your local channel has been included there. Next up is this game, Skateboard Party 3. It's a pretty popular game as far as skateboarding games go for the Fire TV. And so the Skateboard Party 3 was released a few months ago, I believe. But now the free demo / light version has just arrived on the Fire TV this week. So if you want to check that out for free before committing to actually buying the game, you can now do that. Next is the Hallmark Channel. They've released an app for the Fire TV, an official app. You do unfortunately need to have a cable subscription to gain access to the content. I haven't installed this myself yet to see if there's any free content in there. Usually there is some free content in apps like this, so you might want to check that out. Their programming is more of that like feel-good housewife kind of programming, I like to call it. So it's not really right up my alley. That's why I haven't really installed it myself yet. But if you're interested in that, Hallmark Channel now has an official Fire TV app. And last one I want to mention, I'm not exactly sure how it's pronounced. I don't know if it's pronounced Dazn or D-A-Z-N, but this is a German-only app with sports content. I know a quarter of you are not in the U.S., so I do want to try to mention more international stuff. So this app looks interesting. I was not able to install it myself, but it definitely looks like they've got a lot of good content in there. So if you're in Germany and you're looking for a sports-related app to watch some games or highlights and that sort of stuff, it says they have a live stream as well as on-demand content, so you'll want to check that out. Of course, I'll put a link down below in the show notes to all the apps I talk about and all of the articles I talk about. And the last bit of news that I want to talk about is that Amazon has announced the premiere dates for a lot of their shows coming up for the rest of this year. Basically, they've got a bunch of comedy shows that are coming in September. You've got One Mississippi, Fleabag, and Transparent Season 3. Those are going to be arriving in September. You've got Woody Allen's new show, Crisis in Six Scenes. That's going to be coming at the end of September. And then a new show called Goliath coming in October, as well as Good Girls Revolt. That got green lit, if you remember it from back in the pilot seasons. That's coming October 28th. And then Red Oaks, which I love this show. I don't know. It hasn't gotten enough attention, in my opinion. It was one of my favorite new shows that Amazon put out. But thankfully, the second season of that is coming. And then we've got season 3 of Mozart in the Jungle coming in December. And then finally, the second season of Man in the High Castle is coming December 16th. All right, let's move on to the Q&A section. Like I do every Thursday, I put a post up asking people to submit their question that I'll try to answer here on the episode. Like I said earlier, I will go through all the questions on the live stream, but I'll probably cut out ones I don't have great answers for or just don't know I have an answer for at all for the actual edited version. So if you don't hear your question addressed, I did answer it during the live stream, but you know I might have just cut it out during the actual episode. All right, we got a question here from Tony asking about that $10 Amazon credit from the Heyday app promotion that I talked about last week. He says a lot of people received it and he's wondering, does everybody's credit expire at the same time or is it like 30 days from when you actually receive the credit? Mostly in those promotions that I post about, I pretty much always include a link to the actual terms and conditions of the actual promo. It's very rare that I can't find that link. And so the only reason I won't include it is if I can't find it at all. But for that promo, I did actually include it in that post. So if you go back, you can read all of the terms. And I'm pretty sure that that promotion, the credit expires September 30th for everybody. So regardless of when you actually received that free $10 App Store credit, your $10 credit will expire if you don't use it on September 30th. I'll put a link down in the show notes to anybody who has not heard of this or has not done it yet. There's still time. I think the promo ends August 30th. So from between now and August 30th, you could still actually qualify to receive it. I know Lori, for example, on Twitter told me that she hasn't received her $10 promo. So I'm not sure if they've stopped giving them out or not. But somebody else told me they just received it a few days ago. So you know, I don't know, but definitely check down on the link below if you haven't received that $10 promo and you want to take advantage of that. Basically, all you have to do is download, and not even really download. You just have to click the buy button and store it in the cloud for this free game called Heyday. And a few days later, Amazon will hopefully send you a $10 App Store credit. All right, next up, we got a few questions from Lewis. First, he's asking if he has his Fire TV stick connected to the USB port on his TV, and if that USB port isn't producing enough power or as much power as the actual, you know, AC plug, will it cause his Fire TV stick to run slower or more sluggishly? I don't know the for sure answer to this, but I can definitely kind of theorize on it. So definitely if it's not receiving enough power, it will display an error message or not, you know, or you'll definitely have actual issues where it'll restart itself. I've seen that where if I've had it plugged into a USB port instead of the AC power, the Fire TV will seem to work fine. But then when you try to launch something that's CPU intensive, it will not have enough power for the CPU and actually, you know, will restart itself because it'll just choke basically. So I guess theoretically you could see issues or slowdowns, but I doubt you would see slowdowns. More so you might see Wi-Fi affected because a lot of mobile devices, for example, if they have a lot of battery juice, they will be able to get a better signal because they'll be able to pump more power into those antennas. I don't know if the Fire TV stick does this or not, but that's the main thing I would think would be affected if you had enough power to use it, but not as much as it is expecting. So, you know, again, big question there. What is actually going to happen if you're in that, like, that weird zone where it's enough, but not really as much as it needs? I actually got Philip here chiming in where he says his Fire TV stick plugged into his Vizio TV does lag and he had to plug it into an actual power block. And so there you go. That's one real example there of where it actually will lag a little bit. Our next question from Lewis is asking about that HDR segment that I did last week. First, he's wondering for an OLED TV, they're a bit pricey for him, so he's wondering what price point I would think they're worth it. Lewis says he thinks about $1,500. They go for around $2,500 to $3,000 right now for the large sizes, like the 65-inch OLEDs from LG. He's saying, $1,500 is a great sweet spot, I think, for a TV, for a very large TV. I would pay about $2,000, or if you can get under that $2,000 mark, I think that's a good point, I think, you know, especially for OLED, since that is like the premium technology right now for televisions. Next, Lewis is asking if I think that the next-gen Fire TV will have both the HDR10 standard as well as Dolby Vision. I personally would guess that Dolby Vision might not be included. I would lean towards most likely only HDR10, since HDR10 is an open standard, But Dolby Vision does require, as Lewis mentions here, a royalty paid to Dolby for including that technology in a device. And for something like a Fire TV, which is trying to be as efficient as it can with price, you know, it's trying to pack in as much into that $100 price range, especially right now when so few people have HDR capable TVs. It's like the latest new technology, you know, even 4K is still pretty rare. And so I would think that since not too many people have HDR TVs just yet, that Amazon won't jump the gun and go ahead and include all HDR standards. They'll probably just include HDR 10, which covers most HDR TVs, save a little bit of money, and maybe in the next, you know, generation include the Dolby Vision if it does become like the standard. But Amazon did announce that they are going to support Dolby Vision content. So all of Amazon's HDR content is now available in both the HDR 10 and the Dolby Vision standards. So who knows? I mean, you know, the fact that they actually announced that they're supporting both leads you to kind of think that they're going to have both in their hardware, but you never know. I would not be surprised if they're going to save a little bit of money, save a little bit on that licensing fee, and only include the HDR 10 in the next gen devices. Okay, last question from Lewis here. He's wondering, what's the point of Plex? You know, what are the benefits of using Plex over something like Kodi? And why do people even use Plex over something like Kodi? So Lewis here mentions how Plex has to decode and you still have to decode on the box itself. That's not actually accurate, so I do want to clarify what he's saying there. With Plex, what it's actually doing is not called decoding, it's actually called transcoding. So what it's doing is it's actually encoding your files in something else. So it's converting, you know, transcoding the files. And so it's basically converting them into a format that the device itself can decode. So both with Kodi and with Plex, when the device, the Fire TV specifically, receives the stream, it still has to decode that stream. That you can't get around that. But what Plex does is it actually might, depending on the file format of the files and depending on the device that's actually receiving the file to play, Plex might actually change the format of the file, you know, in real time. So that's pretty much the biggest advantage of Plex. Not so much on the Fire TV, because pretty much most of the big popular formats the Fire TV is capable of playing. Plex's transcoding was more important in the older days when Plex was first, you know, when it first hit the market, where a lot of phones, especially the iPhone, was incapable of decoding a lot of the newer codecs, you know, like the newer formats, the newer containers like MKVs, the H.264s and the H.265s. So people who were using Plex on something like an iPhone, they couldn't access their media directly like you can through Kodi on the Fire TV. So you needed something in the middle like Plex to change the format in real time. And that way you could stream very easily without having to re-encode your files into something else that the Apple hardware could view, because Apple pretty much MP4 was the limited form factor that the default players in Apple devices could encode. And so that's the main benefit of Plex. On the Fire TV, you don't really see it so much like you're saying. Another advantage though of Plex over Kodi is that it is a central server, meaning you can have all of your files coming from one place. And of course you can have all your files on a single computer, but with Plex, you're actually serving not just the files, but you're serving the artwork, you're serving the synopsis, you're serving the ratings of the movies or the TV shows that you have in your Plex, content in your Plex library. And so some people like that, where if you have multiple devices, all of that information will stay in sync on the Plex server. And so, for example, if you watch something on one device and stop midway, you can pick it up on another device right where you left off. So that's an advantage of Plex there, because it is a central server. Whereas with Kodi, each individual Kodi installation is separate. I know there are ways to set up Kodi to where it actually talks to a central server, but for the most part, most people just put their files on a PC or on a NAS and serve them up through a regular like file sharing protocol. And Kodi basically stores all of that local information about the artwork and the thumbnails and all that stuff on each individual device. And so that is an advantage to Plex. So some people find that simpler, some people don't. I personally like Kodi's implementation better. I don't need everything on a central device. I don't have that many TVs or that many locations that are accessing my content. But for the most part, Most people find Plex a little bit easier to set up if they're not familiar with network setups and protocols and sharing files. You know, with Plex, you can just install software on a PC, point it to a directory that has your files, install the app on the TV, log in both places, and you're good to go. Your content can get there. Whereas with Kodi, you have to actually go in yourself, share the content, make sure you can access that content from the different devices. Plex, because it has this whole login middleman server thing, and where you actually log into the cloud and then it finds your actual server for you, does the connection for you, you can actually access your Plex content a little bit better, a little bit easier if you're outside of the house, for example. So again, this comes into the whole Apple iPhone concept, where when Plex first was announced, it was very popular on Apple devices, Apple iPhones, because it allowed people to actually view their content when they were out of the house. And because they were streaming it over a cellular network, Plex could transcode that into a lower bit rate that could actually be streamed over a cellular network. So again, this is all kind of the main differences with Plex. But for a Fire TV, Kodi really tends to be better, but Plex is still a great option. Next question is from EdDog323. He's asking, on a pre-rooted 5.2.1.0 device, can he still load Fire TV Launcher or Fire Stopper using the ADB commands, even though those apps are blacklisted? Yeah, you can, but you need to not just re-enable those apps if they get, you know, disabled by the blacklist, but you have to also disable the blacklist altogether. So I'll put a link down in the show notes. I have an article on how to disable the blacklist and to re-enable those apps if they did get blocked. But keep in mind that on that latest version, that 5.2.1.0, yes, you can use these apps, but Firestopper specifically, a lot of those features in Firestopper will not work. Like the home button detection, those won't work anymore because Amazon changed the way apps can make internal ADB connections. And so, yeah, that just doesn't work on the newer versions. 5.0.5 is the latest version that fully supports Firestopper or Firestarter, so you'll have to use that. But yeah, Firestopper is a little bit crippled on the latest version, but you can get it to run. All right, next question from Bradley's asking if it's worth buying an Amazon Echo remote from eBay since they're sold out on Amazon. He's wondering if I know whether the Alexa app on Android or iOS is going to get the ability to actually transmit voice like the Fire TV app can. This is actually a feature I've been expecting to happen, but I have a feeling that Amazon is working on a big Alexa update, you know, to both the Amazon Echo and their apps, just because Alexa, since it basically came out, you know, on the Amazon Echo, hasn't changed that much. I mean, obviously it's expanded and received more features, but it's generally the same Alexa that we've known. The app hasn't changed too much. And so I kind of expect things to get updated just because Alexa and the Amazon Echo hardware have been so popular. So I would say if you can hold out until, I'd say, December, you know, if December comes along and we haven't seen any changes yet, we're probably not going to see them anytime soon. I did see a while back a hint from a third party that sort of indicated the Alexa app was going to get this voice transmitting capability like the Fire TV app. But nothing really came of it. I'll put a link down in the show notes to that. I forget the details, but some third party that was integrating Alexa into their device mentioned in their press release that you could talk to Alexa from the Alexa app, which you cannot do. So I thought maybe that was a hint that they had insider info, but unfortunately that was months ago and nothing ever came of it. So I don't know. I am sort of expecting something in the Alexa line to come along before Christmas, so that's why I say wait till December if you can. If you don't see anything by December, then probably, you know, pick up one of those remotes off of eBay. Okay, next question here is from Hawkstead. He's saying his Fire TV stick is overheating, specifically when he's playing the game Casino World Championship. He says he has removed, quote, the insulation pads because he read it from some source that those were the issue. Unfortunately, those are not insulation pads. Those are thermal pads, and they actually help remove heat from the device. And so by removing them, Hawkstead, you have actually made things worse. I'm sorry to say, hopefully you kept those pads and you can actually put them back in. But basically, those pads actually conduct heat better than air. And so by removing them, you've now introduced air in between the actual CPU and the metal like cap that the CPU, you know, kind of covers. It uses that cap as a heat sink, and then that cap kind of gets connected with another pad to the actual plastic of the Fire TV stick casing. And so that's how the Fire TV stick actually dissipates heat. It goes from the CPU through those pads, through the metal actual, like, you know, casing, and through the actual plastic exterior of the Fire TV stick. And so, yeah, you've actually made things worse, unfortunately, by removing those pads. Because air itself is actually a pretty good insulator. You know, you probably heard of dual pane glass. The reason why dual pane glass helps insulate your house is because there's air in between that glass. And so heat actually doesn't travel through air as well as it does those pads and through metal, for example. And so Hawkstead is asking, what next? Since you're comfortable opening up your Fire TV stick, I would say, yeah, you could buy these little cheap metal heat sinks and actually stick those on to the CPUs of your Fire TV stick. That would probably be the best thing to do, because the Fire TV stick, to stay compact and to stay sleek, doesn't actually have a heatsink installed. It's just the chip and little thin pieces of metal that cover the chip, and then it just tries to dissipate that heat out of the plastic, which isn't the best thing to do. Metal definitely is a better conductor of heat than the plastic. And so if you really want to make your Fire TV stick run cool and not overheat, if you are having issues, I would say the best thing to do would be, yeah, to open it up, actually attach heat sinks using thermal paste or thermal pads, like the ones you removed. Actually use that to attach little tiny heat sinks onto the CPU, onto the memory, onto the different chips that are on the device. Be careful not to short circuit anything with those heat sinks, because you're going to have to buy really tiny ones to fit those tiny CPUs. But you could put those in and then actually, like, either not include the casing of the Fire TV stick anymore, or cut a hole in the casing so that those heat sinks stick out. I've never seen anybody do this, but if I had a stick that was overheating and I wanted to basically solve it once and for all, I would imagine that would absolutely solve it. I mean, the only thing more than that you could possibly do is actually attach a very tiny fan, you know, power it off a USB, for example. But I think that's overkill. I think if you do actually attach a heatsink, a real little heatsink, onto the actual CPU of the Fire TV stick, that'll probably solve your problem. But most likely your overheating problem has gotten worse since removing that insulation pad. You know, that would be my guess, because, sorry, they're not insulation pads like you say. They're thermal pads. And those are actually, like I said, used to conduct heat away from the CPU. We got a question here from Eddie asking if the Fire TV's voice search is slow. He says he tried it on the Fire TV stick specifically, and when he's performing a voice search, there was a bit of lag and a delay to getting a response. My guess is that probably has to do with your internet connection more than the Fire TV stick itself. Definitely on a Fire TV stick with a strong Wi-Fi connection, I have not seen it slower than a Fire TV or slow in general. But voice searching is definitely highly dependent on your internet connection and your speed and your ping with your internet connection. And the Fire TV stick is notorious for having poor Wi-Fi reception, Wi-Fi connection, compared to something like the Fire TV box. It definitely does not have as strong of an antenna as the Fire TV box itself. And so the reason why a voice search would be slow or there would be lag with the internet connection being poor is because when you actually do a voice search, what happens is the Fire TV basically records your voice, compresses that, and sends it off to Amazon's cloud, where then it gets processed, it figures out what the result is going to be, and then it sends that result down to the Fire TV and the Fire TV stick. And so that whole process has to happen very quickly, you know, in 1 or 2 seconds. And there's a lot going on there. And so if there's even a slight slowdown in the actual connection, either in the upload or the download of the actual, you know, results, you'll definitely see a lag there. And so my suggestion, try to make sure your Fire TV stick is extended beyond your TV or beyond your AV receiver, meaning use the little extender that came with it or buy a longer extender. You know, a lot of times when the Fire TV stick is right up against other devices like your TV or your AV hardware, it will get poor reception. And so just pushing it out like a foot beyond that other hardware will make it get a lot better, you know, a Wi-Fi connection. And so that's my suggestion, is try to give it a better connection and see if that helps with the voice search. Okay, that will conclude episode number 51 of the AFTV Newscast. Thank you so much for watching. If you're watching on YouTube, please hit that like button down below. I really appreciate that. And subscribe to my YouTube channel. Of course, you can get the podcast in audio-only formats also. If you prefer to just listen that way, you can get it on iTunes, on Stitcher, on TuneIn, Google Play Music. All the big popular podcast apps will usually have the podcast available if you just search for AFTV Newscast. As always, I stream live on Fridays at 1:30 p.m. Pacific. I really enjoy when people can watch live. We go back and forth on Twitter during the actual podcast, and so it's really enjoyable, really get a kick out of it. So I really encourage people to watch live if they can. But of course, I always put up the episode in video and audio formats on Saturdays usually. Again, I'm sorry if I didn't get to your question. Again, I did answer all of the questions live during the live stream, but I may have cut out some of the ones that I didn't have great answers for or didn't have answers for in general. And so if your question got cut out, I'm sorry. I just probably didn't have a good answer for it. But thank you for watching and for listening, and hopefully I'll see you next week.